Hey y'all, welcome to Baywide, a show dedicated to all 200 miles of the Chesapeake Bay. On today's podcast, we're finally figuring out what the hell is a TMDL and where it came from, how it applies to Chesapeake Bay, all that. But first, I want to address a quick question that I received from Kevin, who messaged me on Twitter. He said, "Hey Bert, love the podcast. You touched on blue crabs a few episodes ago, but did not explain why crabs from the Chesapeake are hands down more delicious than ones found in other regions. Can you touch on this? Thank you." Love the question. First, I'm just going to go ahead and operate under the assumption right now that blue crabs from the Bay are absolutely better tasting than other regions. That is a fact. And why is that a fact? Let's see. Here's my thinking. Could be wrong. This is just me off the cuff. But the Bay does have less salinity than the ocean, oftentimes a fourth less of salt, depending on where you're crabbing. And salt water gives seafood a briny and harsh taste, typically. So blue crabs in Chesapeake have a nice sweet flavor, probably because they have less salt in the water and spend a lot of their life here. So that's my final answer. If you like sweeter crabs, and blue crabs already have a sweet taste to them, regardless of where you get them from. But if you like the sweeter crab taste in Chesapeake Bay region, you're going to think those are the best crabs available. And honestly, that would be right. All right, Kevin, thanks for the question. Everyone else, you can find me at Burt Baywide over at Twitter. It's all one word. Anyway, let's move right on into the headlines. The Chesapeake Bay came home with another report card, and I'm putting it up on the fridge again this year. Yeah, you might not be bragging if your kid came home with a C, but this is the sixth straight year that our Bay has gotten that grade, and I'm proud of it. Before, the Bay was always failing, but now through the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science report card that they just came out with this Friday, June 15th, we're seeing a prolonged trend upwards. When the Bay first got a C, it was hard to tell if it was just a fluke year or ideal weather patterns or simply chance. But now, after six positive years and climbing, scientists are suggesting these improvements are the result of real progress and not just chance. This grade is based on several indicators of overall health, underwater grasses, dissolved oxygen, total nutrients, and they all show positive trends over time, an encouraging sign for water quality. Researchers also saw improvements in several geographic areas, including the Elizabeth River, James River, and the Upper Western Shore as a whole. The Elizabeth and James both received record highs with a C and B minus respectively. Now, several areas of health stand out in this year's report card. It shows a fisheries index of 95%, which is the highest score ever recorded, indicating that populations of bay anchovy, striped bass, blue crabs continue to thrive. There's also been improvement in underwater grasses, which provide critical habitat for many bay species, from a 12% score in 1986 to a 44% score in 2017, another record high. If you want a link to this report card, you can go ahead and just look in the episode description there. I'll put the links in there. I had a few people ask me that they wanted to use these links and things like that, so I better start getting better at putting them in the actual episode. So anyway, you can find it there. Now, another indicator of bay health that we're going to look at was also released last week, and that is 36 inches, although it's much less science-based. It is the sneaker index score of the 31st annual Patuxent River Waden, and that takes place on the second Sunday of every June. That's where former Maryland State Senator Bernie Fowler wades into the Patuxent River, and he sees how far he can go in before seeing his sneakers at the bottom, or being no longer able to see that. Back in the 1950s and 1960s, Senator Fowler was able to walk into the Patuxent River up to his chest and still see the bottom. So this is a way that he does this to garner awareness and close out the Chesapeake Bay Awareness Week. Fowler waded into the river with his signature white sneakers and cowboy hat, saw the sneakers through 36 inches of water. That's this year's sneaker index score. And how does it compare to last year? Well, last year was 41.5 inches. Never fear though, trends are going up, just like we talked about in the last headline. And you can't really take one day's worth of unofficial data and call it a yearly standard. This event's just for fun. But if we were to consistently get a sneaker index of 57 inches like Fowler used to get back in the 1950s and 60s, we can start talking about a restored Patuxent River. All right, let's move right along to what the hell's a TMDL in today's headlines. It's closing out. Let's get into the body. Today, I'll try to explain the mechanism behind so much of that recent progress that Chesapeake Bay is enjoying at the TMDL. It's political. There's a lot of people who claim credit for this progress, and there's a lot of people that didn't want it to happen. All of this is going to be jammed and packed into this little tiny podcast, and I'm going to try to keep the ball rolling on it and see who whined about it, who supported it. But first, what is it? Anyway, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation refers to this plan as the Clean Water Blueprint. The Bay Program and many other organizations call it the pollution diet. The EPA calls it the TMDL. It's all the exact same thing. And I'm sure you're aware of the Clean Water Act. That's where this really came into play. It was enacted in 1972, and it's the primary federal law in the United States that governs water pollution. There are many sections and parts of this deal that I'm not going to touch on, but the real takeaway here is that the Clean Water Act requires states to compile a list of water bodies that do not fully support beneficial uses for aquatic life, fisheries, drinking water, recreation, industry, or agriculture. So if a body of water doesn't fit the needs for all these things, they put it on this list called the 303D, which is basically just a section that's found in the legislation. The states can categorize the water as being fully supporting, impaired, or threatened under that criteria. Again, that's aquatic life, fisheries, drinking water, recreation, industry, or agriculture. So after this, the state agencies that govern the body of water, like Maryland's Department of Natural Resources, or Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection, or Virginia's Department of Environmental Quality, they all do the same thing in their respective states. They're supposed to write up and plan, basically calculate, how much of a certain pollutant that that body of water can hold before it's like too much for it to handle. Like how many millions of pounds of nitrogen can a river hold before, if it were healthy, before it deteriorates in quality? So a TMDL is a plan for restoring impaired water that identifies the maximum amount of a pollutant that a body of water can receive while still meeting water quality standards. It means total maximum daily load. What is the max that it can take? Ideally, a state figures this out. They submit it to the EPA with a plan of how they're going to correct it, and the EPA can either approve or disapprove of the plan. It's cooperative federalism at its finest. But as we know, that's never going to work. If a state doesn't do anything to develop a TMDL, or if the EPA just straight out rejects the plan, then the EPA is responsible for creating and issuing a plan for a TMDL. And the EPA made some guidelines back in 1992 to kind of help states create these really complicated plans and give them some guidance on it. So let's take the Patuxent River as an example. We were just talking about it. It's the longest river in Maryland that is completely contained in the state. So theoretically, that'd be an easy TMDL, right? An easy write-up. It's kind of wonky. You know, it's got a ton of industrial pollution, and Senator Fowler, he's wading in, he's seeing that it's impaired, and boom, he can get it listed when he was a senator as impaired, and then Maryland would just submit a TMDL for that river and how to save it to the EPA. But what about like a more complicated river? What about like the Potomac River? Maryland and Virginia govern that together. So I guess they could do a TMDL together. Well, to fix the Potomac, you probably have to fix the Anacostia River that flows into the Potomac. Now, let's even expand that wider. What about the Chesapeake Bay? How do you write a TMDL for Chesapeake Bay? There are 150 major rivers that flow into it. You can't really fix the bay without treating all those streams and creeks and rivers that are flowing all that pollution into it. So how do you approach that? Who's responsible for that? And it's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of cooperation that needs to happen there. And so obviously, you know, give these states and the EPA some benefit of the doubt. It's really hard to make a plan that intricate. Obviously, one state can't solve the Bay's issue. More cooperation is needed. And the states have tried to cooperate and made some really sincere promises. Like, they meant it so much. They've made a lot of promises to each other for a while. First, in 1983, there was a Chesapeake Bay Agreement between Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Washington, D.C., and the Chesapeake Bay Commission and EPA. And the Chesapeake Bay Commission, just real quick to tell you, they're like a tri-state legislative body representing Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, and they were created in 1980 to help Maryland and Virginia collaborate on Chesapeake Bay management, and then Pennsylvania became a member later in like 1985. All they do is advise each state's General Assembly on matters deemed to be like bay-wide concern. So these guys all got together. They're like, all right, guys, let's work together to save the bay. We know we're going to need to work together for this, so let's all agree that we're going to like look at this as a group instead of just doing our own thing. Anyway, those promises were made, but nothing became of it because there wasn't any concrete thing that was agreed upon. It was just like, yeah, we're gonna do this. We're going to reduce our pollution. So it wasn't comprehensive enough. In 1987, there was another Chesapeake Bay Agreement, and that had a further goal of reducing and controlling point and non-point sources of pollution. And they actually put a number on what was needed. They said, hey, let's look at our nitrogen and phosphorus levels, and let's reduce that by 40% by the year 2000. And let's develop a Bay-wide implementation strategy. Like, how are we going to create this? Like, how are we going to get all these wastewater treatment plants restored? How are we going to prioritize it? Let's make a plan together. How are we going to do our agriculture? How are we going to change the way we transport chicken manure? I don't even know. All that stuff would be in the plan. Spoiler alert, they didn't reach those goals by 2000. You know what we did have by the year 2000, though? Eiffel 65 on blue.
Yo, listen up, here's the story.
So it wasn't a total loss. But you know what the 1987 agreement did establish? They established the Chesapeake Bay Program, which is a pretty big step in getting all those federal agencies and state agencies together in the same room so they can actually plan together. Now, remember what needs to happen before a TMDL can be created, total maximum daily load. The states need to list a body of water of their jurisdiction as impaired, and then you can start creating a TMDL for that. So, these agreements right now, they're just gentlemen's agreements. There's no action plans. They're not even close to being a TMDL worthy. But none of the states had done any listing of impaired waterways yet, which is insane to think about. It wasn't until 1996 that Delaware listed Bay Waters on its 303D list. Well, so way to go, Delaware. Consistently, the first state ever since the Revolutionary War, you did work. Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., they added Bay Waters onto their impaired list in 1998. After this, Virginia and D.C. wrote consent decrees to the EPA that essentially said, hey, listen, feds, if we can't get our shit together and write a TMDL ourselves and submit it to you by May 1st of 2011, we want you to write one for us. We need this. We want this. It's just so hard. It's just so hard. So help us out if we don't fulfill our end of the bargain. And the EPA was like, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Anyway, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's basically what Virginia and DC said. To be more exact, in 1998, the American Canoe Association and the American Littoral Society filed a complaint against the EPA for failure to comply with the 303D provisions of the Clean Water Act, basically saying, hey guys, there are rivers listed on the impaired waterways, and so you should start, you know, making plans for that. Anyway, the EPA signed a consent decree that said they would develop TMDLs on those impaired waterways if Virginia failed to do so. A little bit later, Maryland also wrote a memorandum of understanding with the EPA that said, hey guys, you agree, I agree, that we need to have a TMDL, so let's get it in action by 2011. So everyone saw how cool Maryland was for writing this memorandum of understanding. And in 2000, Delaware, DC, New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, along with Maryland again, basically all the Bay states except for West Virginia, like what the hell, West Virginia? They signed another memorandum of understanding with the EPA, agreeing to the following things that I'm going to outline right now. Ready? Here it is. Number one, work cooperatively to achieve nutrient and sediment reduction targets necessary to achieve goals of the Chesapeake Bay by 2010. Provide for an inclusive and open comprehensive public participation process and collaborate on the development and use of innovative measures such as effluent trading, cooperative implementation mechanisms, and expanded interstate agreements to achieve the necessary reduction. Basically, hey, we're going to work together and we're going to get this all figured out by 2010. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. In this memorandum, they also said that they would report annually on the progress toward achieving the goals of the agreement. Finally, in 2002, West Virginia was like, sorry guys, I'm late to the party, I'm a mountain state, I don't really think about the Bay too much, but I'll go ahead and sign this memorandum too. So all the Bay watershed states signed it, EPA was all about it too. And yet, no one made a TMDL still. No TMDL established for the Bay. Alright, so it's June of 2000, and there was yet another Chesapeake Bay agreement, and it said that, alright, hey guys, we didn't meet the 40% nutrient reduction goal we agreed upon in 1987, but let's go ahead and continue to work for it. By 2010, let's correct nutrient and sediment-related problems in the Bay completely and just remove the Bay from the impaired waterways list because it'll be so great by then, which is totally baffling to me. Like, you punted the pollution reduction goals numerous times for decades, and then you're like, all right, we're going to fix this in 10 years after hundreds of years of pollution. Unfettered pollution in the Bay. You think you can fix it in 10 years? But they thought they could. Spoiler alert, they didn't. But hey, I'm just a guy talking to a microphone in 2018 with, you know, all that hindsight behind me. So what do I know? But by December of 2003, there are finally some real numbers, like a basin-wide caps on nutrient and sediment. They were agreed upon by all the Bay partners, and they set a cap of 175 million pounds of nitrogen per year, 12.8 million pounds of phosphorus, and 4.15 million tons of sediment per year. So they all did a bunch of projection modeling. For the first time ever, science and modeling was used to try to meet the EPA's proposed dissolved oxygen water quality criteria. And they took that data and were like, all right, what do we need to get nitrogen, phosphorus, pollution-wise in order to meet these goals? So this is like almost seeming like a TMDL. In fact, a lot of these standards were used later when a TMDL was created. To achieve those nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment cap loads, all the jurisdictions developed what became known as the Chesapeake Bay Tributary Strategies, and it outlined river-specific implementation activities to reduce those nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment. For the first time, another science-based way of looking at reductions. Also, in 2004 and 2005, the EPA started giving some real guidance. They were like, if you guys want to take waters off the impaired waterway list, here's some water quality standards we should all agree on, and it would be nice if you would aim for those. And they basically created criteria for oxygen, clarity, submerged aquatic vegetation, and chlorophyll A for the Chesapeake Bay itself. So Maryland, Virginia, and Delaware, they all adopted the EPA's water quality standards as what to aim for. Now everyone was working on the same page, towards the same goal, and the same criteria for what a safe bay would be. Anyway, this is getting long-winded. The Bay Watershed Partners met again in September of 2005. They had a Chesapeake Bay re-evaluation workshop, which was instrumental in laying the groundwork for how collaborative work would be done on the future TMDL. Like having a summit where everyone got together and they talked about it and they continuously looked at what they were doing and evaluated it. That is the key to successful TMDL, which by now, it's 2005, we still don't have one, but at least we're getting some frameworks in place. So in 2007, they met again, the EPA and all the jurisdictions, just like they did in 2005, and they reevaluated their nutrient and sediment caps, all those things that they were doing, and they found that sufficient progress had not been made toward improving water quality in the main stem of the Chesapeake Bay or its tributary. So they were still impaired, and what they're doing were not enough. They all agreed upon that. In response, the jurisdictions, the principal staff committee, which is like representative of all the states, they requested the EPA to establish a multi-state Chesapeake Bay TMDL that would look at nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment and actually put those TMDLs in place. So the next couple of years were kind of a limbo stages of everyone being like, okay, we need a TMDL, please set one up, we're happy to help, let's do this. And the EPA, according to some sources, were really dragging their feet on this. But to be fair, it does take a lot of studying and research to make a good TMDL. Anyway, the Bay Foundation and a coalition of watermen environmentalists on Maryland and Pennsylvania, Maryland and Virginia, they sued the EPA in early 2009 for a breach of contract, basically saying EPA leaders had signed two federal state agreements to clean up the Bay and they were not doing diddly. They're failing to enforce the Clean Water Act. Actually, when Bernie Fowler, the guy that we were talking about earlier in the headlines, when he was asked about it back in 2009, when this suit was filed, he said, "Today is a day of reality when pretending we're doing something is over." A couple of months later, in May of 2009, President Obama signed Executive Order 13508, otherwise called the Chesapeake Bay Protection and Restoration, which ordered the federal government to lead a renewed effort to restore the bay and its watershed. You know, perhaps that suit, you know, that Chesapeake Bay Foundation filed made them quicken their stance a little bit. Obama signed the executive order, and he told the federal agencies to get on it. And basically, 11 federal agencies, including the EPA, they responded to this. They met, they designed a Chesapeake Bay TMDL, which is officially the largest TMDL in the history of the United States. It's the first watershed-wide TMDL. And so the Bay Foundation settled its suit against the EPA because, well, the TMDL they sued for had arrived. And this total maximum daily load plan, it is going until 2025. It's a 15-year, $19 billion cleanup with specific pollution limits, milestone checkup, watershed implementation plans, the whole nine yards. And I won't get into it all today, but it is a big reason that for the past 6 years, we've been getting a C letter grade. Maybe one day I'll tell you about how it works. But for now, you know it's history. You know what it is. And that's enough for me in this little itty-bitty podcast I'm doing. Last week, we talked about the 2017 midpoint assessment that was about the TMDL. So hopefully you have a little more context now. Anyway, all the other jurisdictions in the United States have looked at this example of a TMDL and are like, oh man, we could get this going in like the Galveston Bay area or the whole Mississippi Basin. All this could be applied to greater watershed implementation and reductions in a lot of these TMDL things that we need, all these pollutants that we need. So the Chesapeake Bay is a prime example for the rest of the country and have really set a precedent for doing a watershed-wide cleanup. Thanks all for listening. Please write a review so I can get more listeners. Oh my gosh, maybe even a sponsorship. Just kidding, I won't do that to you. But really, I do want to justify the fact that I had to start paying for server space, so write a review for me and have a great couple of weeks. Thanks a lot, all. All right, everybody, welcome to the secret spot where I explain to you the Chesapeake Bay meme of the week. Really, meme of the bye week, but whatever. No one's really making these, so I put one together, and it is not really a standard format. It's actually not even funny, but you know what? I always make myself do it to the week's category, and here it is. It's a picture of Bernie Fowler, who is the guy that's wading into the Patuxent River for like 31 years straight, trying to get an assessment with the sneaker assessment. It's a picture of him. He just got out of the Patuxent River. He's wearing overalls, his amazing cowboy hat, and a American flag that's like strapped to the front of his hat. And he has some text on his chest, and it says Bay in like red letters. He's the Chesapeake Bay in this meme. Then there's a guy in a white t-shirt. He's like bent over. He is measuring Bernie Fowler's overalls to see how many inches down it is. As we know, it was like 36 inches. Anyway, he's measuring that, and on Bernie Fowler's wet legs, it says lack of progress, and the guy measuring on his back, he has red lettering that says EPA. I know, kind of complicated meme, I know. Anyway, Bernie Fowler is saying, while the EPA is measuring his lack of progress, or the years of lack of progress, because he's the Bay, he's saying, write a TMDL already. And that's the meme.